interview with Goldie Ferris for the California State College Bakersfield California Odyssey Project by Stacy Jagels at 4416 North Durant Way, Fresno, California, on Tuesday, March 10th at 1 p.m. I thought we'd start first with when and where you were born and a little bit about your childhood.
Okay. Oh, well, I was born in Gainesville, Texas on a farm. And I guess we lived there until I was about, maybe just about a year old. We moved. And then the next farm we lived was, I lived there until I was 6 years old. So when I think about my early childhood, I think of that place. And it was just a really terrible old house. And I was the oldest in the family. And my sister, just 2 years younger than me, I sort of... I guess she was just like my playmate. I can remember her being a small child and her pretty blonde hair, and I used to take care of her. But when she got a little bit older, I never wanted to play with her outside because I was more interested in doing things like I can remember being 3 years old and sitting on a footstool by my father's chair, and I thought if I looked at him reading that newspaper long enough, because I knew he looked at it and he talked about it and something was happening. So I thought I would look at him and I would look at the newspaper and I would try to figure out how he did that. So I sort of became completely and totally absorbed in wanting to learn to read. And I knew then that letters were coming to the house and my parents were reading those letters and they were talking about it. So I would take the letters and I would hold them up to the window and I would trace on the back side because I thought I could learn to write that way. And I also... started collecting poems out of the newspaper, and I couldn't read them, but I could tell by the way they were set, that the print was set, that they were different, and that that's what they were, and my father would read them to me. So I still have that box of, actually what it turned out to be was old-fashioned cowboy songs, and I still have them. I brought them to California with me in a matchbox, and I still have them in the same matchbox. And I also like to sew, and my mother taught me to sew when I was 5 years old. And by this time, there were five children in the family, and I sort of became my mother's assistant. I was always was helping to take care of the children. And then when it came time to start to school, we lived out in the country, and the roads were not very good. So my parents sent me to my grandparents. And we went to, for the first half of the first grade, and they sent me to a Catholic school. And then it was the middle of that year that my parents moved to another area. It wasn't too terribly far away, but anyway, I went back to live with them and went to a public school then, a little country school in Texas.
Could you tell me a little bit about your parents' background?
Oh, well, my parents came in a lot of ways very different backgrounds. My mother's family was from the north. Her relatives had come from Ireland, I guess, back what they called the potato famine back in those days, to the northern part of the United States. And her father's family were large landowners up in northern Missouri. And my grandfather was a school teacher in his early days, but back then it wasn't considered all that great to be a teacher. It was better if you could be a landowner and a farmer. That seemed to be important. And then my mother and her family came to Texas, and she was like about 10 years old, and would have been about 1910, I guess, and they bought a farm there. Mm-hmm. So anyway, she was raised from an Irish Catholic background, and they were quite prominent in the community. And my grandfather was involved in the church and politics, and my mother had a good education for her point in time. She graduated from high school and had a business course. And then my father's family were also of Irish descent, and they were from the South, originally from Virginia, and I don't know beyond that where they lived. And from Virginia they went to Alabama, and they were there during the Civil War, and they manufactured guns and bullets and also owned land. And then after the Civil War, times were very difficult in the South, and they came to Texas by way of the Gulf by boat, and they brought with them their farm equipment and animals, and bought land, and then they leased a lot of land. This was in the southern part of Texas, and that was my grandfather's background. And then he was from a large family. There were 15 children, and then he was sort of, I think, in the middle. And then my dad then was from that background, and his mother's father was a Texas Ranger. And he had a lot of experiences with his grandfather as a Texas Ranger in his younger years. And then as he started growing up, he was an old-fashioned cowboy before World War I on the King Ranch in Texas. And then, of course, he was in World War I. And then after World War I, he had an aunt who lived in the same area where my mother lived, and he lived with her and started farming then. And he met my mother through his relatives. The families were friends. Mm-hmm. And then they were married, and my parents were like 27 and 34 when they were married, so they had a large family when they were getting a little bit older.
Mm-hmm. And then did he continue farming?
He continued farming, yes, up until we came, he finally gave it up then in 1939 when we came to California. He always rented farms. We never owned the farms we lived on.
Was that sharecropping?
I'm not sure whether you call it sharecropping. It was a system where whatever he made, the landowner got a percentage of it. So maybe it was sharecropping. I don't remember what it was called. I guess that's what it would be.
Do you remember how well off you were as a child as compared to the other people?
We were the same. I mean, everybody was poor. There was never any cash money. People raised on, and of course, the only people we knew were people lived on farms, and everybody raised their animals and their own milk and eggs, and you raised your fruits and vegetables. And but there was never any money to buy anything, you know, any furniture. The houses were very sparsely furnished, and you just barely could keep transportation. So that seemed to be, but everybody was the same. I was not aware of being poor, I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you find that there was a strong community atmosphere where neighbors would help one another?
Yes, I think
more,
so.
More so than you found in California.
Oh yes, definitely. Yeah, but even then, like my father hired, he always hired, you know, a lot. There was people like I know at the harvest time, mm-hmm. and people that worked in the cotton and that sort of thing.
Did you work in the fields after school or in the summer?
Some. Let's see. From the time I was about nine years old, yes, and particularly that last summer before we came to California. I mean, that's the way we got here. Was we three older kids, and I was 11, my sister was 9, and my brother was 7, and my father. And I mean, we went out first time ever, and this was kind of that starting of that feeling of what was felt so degrading was. He had to go to other neighbors' fields and do their work in order to earn a little bit of cash. It was the only way we could get a hold of any cash money to make the trip to California.
How about your mom? Did she work in the field?
No, she never did, because there were 5 of us kids, and she took care of the chickens and that sort of thing.
Because you were the oldest, did you have a lot of extra chores, taking care of the other children? Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes. And I felt just like I was responsible for those children. I it never occurred to me it wasn't my responsibility to take care of them and do all of these things. And I'm sort of still the one they look to when if they have any problems or need anybody to talk to.
Could you tell me something about the chores that you had to do?
Well, I can remember gathering eggs, you know, when the chickens would lay the eggs, and helping my mother with the, we had milk cows and sold milk, and just generally, you know, helping with the housework and watching after, probably for the most part, was watching my younger brothers and sisters while she did things. I never had a feeling of being really tied down. It was just, those were just the things I did.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have much time left at night?
Well, I can remember, it seemed to me we used to go to bed awfully early because when you don't do a lot of reading by lamplight. The light isn't very good, you know, and long, hard days. And so by the time my dad would get in from the fields or from milking the cows, dinner was late anyway. Well, we called it supper back there. So there wasn't a lot of time between in the evenings.
Do you remember very much about the house you lived in?
Yes, I could see that house as if, it probably doesn't exist now, but if I saw it, I would know it. I can see every room and exactly what it looked like. I can see where the furniture were placed and where we used to sit, and it is so real.
How big was it?
I can remember 1, 2, 3 rooms in a row with a fourth room off of the one on the end. And then there was this huge front porch clear across. And then on the back side was the back door to the kitchen. And there was this one room that had the wood stove and the kitchen. No, what was it? They didn't have cupboards in those old houses. They were like I see them in antique shops now. It would be like a cabinet, a portable type cabinet. And that over in the corner was another cabinet that kept the dishes and the table where we ate, and a little stand where the wash basin and the water bucket was kept because you brought the water in from the outside. And in that room off of that was just like a storage room. It was never heated, and they kept the meat in there, like when they killed the pigs. And then the next two rooms were a combination living room and bedrooms. That was the house where we lived the longest. After that, we lived in 1, 2, 3, 4 other houses for the time we came to California.
Mm-hmm. Were most of them pretty similar to something like that?
Actually, the other houses had been nicer houses. They were people who had, the owners had lived on the farms maybe for years and built really nice homes, but they had been sort of let run down. But they were actually larger homes. There was this one in particular, my goodness, it had like 4 bedrooms upstairs and 1 bedroom downstairs, and there were fireplaces in all of the rooms. And, and my father had remembered that house when he was a young boy, and I guess it was the home in that whole area, but it had been let run down. I can remember it being very cold in the wintertime.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the winters back there.
Oh, they were cold. Very cold, and not a lot of snow, but just maybe once during the winter there would be some snow, but very cold.
Mm-hmm. And when you started at school, it sounds like you probably liked it very much.
Oh, yes.
You're so anxious to learn.
Oh, yes. I can remember the first grade. The first thing the teacher learning would hold up these little flashcards with words on them, and the first one that called out the word got to keep the card. Well, in just no time, I could get, every time she did it, I could get all of the cards. This was a real big game with me. And I can remember Christmas vacation in the first grade when I looked at a newspaper and discovered that all those words I had learned were in that newspaper, and I could read anything there was. I was reading newspapers, magazines. I just couldn't stop. Because when I can remember sitting at my grandmother's dining room table and looking at that newspaper and making that discovery. So I really enjoyed that.
So you really like going to school?
Oh, I liked going to school, yes. Yeah.
Did you ever have to stay out of school to help in the family?
Oh, no, no. My parents were, well, the one thing they wanted was for us to go to school. That was that was really important to them. No, not really. Now, maybe there were some, but I was not aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Did your family go to church?
We went to church some of the time. Let's put it that way. We always lived out in the country, and the roads were bad, and it was difficult. Particularly the winter time. So maybe like in the summertime we would go some. But then once we came to California, we didn't go to church regularly until we came to California, and then we went to church because it was a lot easier to get to church.
Do you remember what sorts of things you did on weekends or holidays or during your leisure time?
Oh, I think running around the farm and kind of exploring hills and trees and crawling up in the barn and that sort of thing. I can remember one place we lived in particular where there was kind of like, it was kind of hilly, and there was a, not too far from the house, there was a hill that you had to almost climb straight up, and I would climb up to the top of it, and it was sort of like a plateau, and then I would sit up there and I could see all over, and I like to do that, and I like to sew. I like to make doll clothes. And
how about toys that you had when you were a child?
Well, we didn't have very many.
Yeah. Some people have told me that because there wasn't any money for that sort of thing, they made their own toys.
I don't remember. Well, we used to, all of us kids together would make up, try to make something like a wagon or something. We'd try to make wheels and something we could pull each other on. I remember doing that. We always got, I can always remember getting a doll at Christmas and maybe one or two other little things. And we really kept what we had. I mean, we didn't tear it up or anything like that. And my sister and I are still laugh about this. She and my brother and the younger children, they loved to make mud pies. That was a big deal with them, but I didn't want to get my hands dirty. And I don't like to work in the yard today because I don't like to get my hands dirty. But they enjoyed doing that. They would mix up mud and put in lids and pretend they were having meals and all that sort of thing. But I was more interested in staying in the house and sewing and reading and sort of thing.
Do you generally have pretty good memories of when you were a child? Fond memories?
Yes, there were no really bad memories.
Mm-hmm. You said that even though you suppose you were poor then, you really didn't think of it.
Oh, no,
that way.
No, because that everybody was the everybody was poor. The same, right. Everybody was the same. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you always hoped that things would get better. One of the reasons we, I guess, lived on so many farms in those last, what would have been like from about 1935 to 1939, was because my father was so determined that there must be a better place to live. There would be a place with better land. And I can remember about 1937, the farm where we lived, where we had the big house on it. We were really doing very well, and it seemed like the weather would never cooperate. And I can remember he had a lot of wheat, and he had gone into debt and bought tractors and things which were just beginning to use on the farms, and he had a huge wheat crop, and the rain came just at harvest time before they got it out of the fields and ruined it. So that was about that was sort of the last straw. That really I think really broke him, that particular thing. And he, because he really had just reached the point where he really thought he was going to be able to accomplish something and make some money and do better. And everything was downhill for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm. You said the weather didn't seem to cooperate. Were the dust storms very bad?
We didn't have any dust storms where we lived. This was more up in Oklahoma and to the west. Mm-hmm. No, we were not, that was never our problem. It was just...
How about the drought?
I don't remember any droughts. Now, maybe there were. That would have probably preceded the Dust Bowl, though, the dust problems. I mean, that would have been the reason. But I don't really think that affected us where we live. It was just that the farm prices kept falling. No matter how much, what you did, there was just never any money for what you did. I can remember my mother and I, and we used to would raise chickens, you know, to sell. And by the time you get your chickens all ready to take to sell them, I can remember watching the prices when I was only like 10 years old, watching those prices in the newspaper every day. Mm-hmm. And they would just keep going down and down and down. And by the time you sold them, you didn't have anything left. Mm-hmm. And eventually you have to have things like sheets and clothing. And I can remember my mother planning big on the turkey she'd raised to buy new sheets and blankets for the beds this one winter. And by the time it came to sell those turkeys, the prices were so low that she got practically nothing.
Mm-hmm. Some people have said that they bartered their labor or the food that they grew on their farms. And that was how they got a lot of their fame. Say if you...
Right.
Helped another fellow on his farm, then he'd give you some pork or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember us doing that too much, but I know people did do it. I can remember needing, one of us would need a pair of shoes, so my mother or father would take a couple of chickens to town. Of course, they didn't trade the chickens for the shoes, but they would take the chickens to the produce place where they were bought and take the money and buy whoever needed a pair of shoes with it.
Since you did live on a farm, did you seem to have enough food all the time, or was that a problem?
I was not aware of not having enough food until the last couple of years. Now, maybe because when I was little, I didn't notice it, or maybe we had more food, but it just became increasingly difficult to have enough food. Even when you raise it, you know, except for canning, there was no way to save what you raised in the summer mm-hmm. for the winter. And what was particularly difficult was having any cash to buy staples. I can remember the last year we were there when every 2 weeks my dad would get like an $8 check for the milk that they sold every day. And that's mm-hmm. all he had. They had to buy sugar and coffee. And you don't buy, even then you didn't buy a lot with $8 for 2 weeks. So that seemed to be the big problem was.
Do you remember if your diet had to change because of that? Did you start eating different?
I don't think so, because basically we had a very simple, bland diet anyway. There was beans cooked almost every day, and lots of potatoes, and pork, and gravy and biscuits, and cornbread. And then in the summer there would be fresh vegetables, and then usually in the winter there would be some canned fruit to kind of go along with that. And sometimes we would go for long periods of time and wouldn't have milk because the cows wouldn't be having calves or something. And that was that was difficult at those times when we didn't have milk.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how large the farms were that your father farmed?
I really don't know because I don't, you know, I don't remember hearing him say how many acres, so I don't have anything
but
to compare.
They were large enough. So that he had to hire some hands.
Oh yes, right. Yeah, he always had to hire people for the cotton and to chop the cotton and hoe the weeds out, and then to pick it in the fall, and to help with when he raised wheat and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And you say he, it must have been about 37 or 38, bought some tractors.
1937. That's when he rented this really huge place. Now I say huge because I don't know how many acres it was, but it was large in comparison to what we had lived on before. And he bought a lot of farm machinery and tractors. That was for the first time.
Was that fairly unusual to see tractors then?
They were just beginning to come into being. Now, I don't know how long before they had them, but I know that farmers were just beginning to get them. My grandfather never did have one, and he quit farming about, shortly after we came to California, so it would have been very early 40s, and I know he never had one.
But even with the help of the tractor, it didn't make things any better.
Well, no, because that it was just really that 1 year is all we lived there, and when had the problems with the rain and the wheat crop not making it. He sold out everything. He actually came out pretty well financially, but he was able to, in other words, another farmer came in and bought the equipment and took over the farm. So we came out with some money, and we weren't left with a big debt and no way to pay it. But if he had made it that year, we probably would not have come to California, because we would have been on our way up.
Mhm. Yeah. When he was farming, do you remember if he ever had to plow under some crops? There was a program that President Roosevelt had where he ordered the farmers to plow under certain crops at certain times to try to raise the price.
No, we were never involved in that. I think that may have come after. I don't know. That may have been after we lived there.
Did you ever hear of people slaughtering animals and then burying them or burning them, not using the meat? This was part of the same program.
Oh, no, no, I was not aware of that.
Okay.
I can remember an aunt that had a farm out near in the Panhandle. There's a little town called Headley. Out in that, and I remember her putting her farm in land bank or something, but I think that was in later years, though, maybe in the 50s or something.
When you were describing how the rain came and ruined the wheat, you said that was kind of the last straw for your father.
Right.
And then he decided to come to California.
Well, no, not right then. It was 2 years before we... After that, we moved on to my grandfather's farm, and he farmed my grandfather's farm for 1 year, but that didn't work out too well. We were all living in the same house, and that didn't work out. So then we rented one more farm and moved on it in fall of 1938. And this was a completely different type of farming. There was some cotton, but it was mostly in fruit and in peanuts. Even though there was a good fruit crop, again, there was no price for it, and he didn't really make anything. So it was at that time when this lady's father came back to Texas for a visit. This family had come out 3 years earlier, and he talked to my father and convinced him that he would be so much better off coming to California and working, just simply working as a farmhand, than he would be in trying to farm there. As I look back, I'm not all that convinced our family would have been better off, because the rest of the family, my father's brothers and sisters and my mother's family that stayed there, of course, World War II came on shortly after that. They really did just as well, if not better, than my parents did after coming to California. But then, they made the decision they thought was best at the time.
Had they thought of coming to California before that?
No. No, and I'm sure it had never entered their mind. And we are still the only people from our family that left Texas. My aunt came out to visit back in the early 70s, and I guess the family still cannot figure out how anybody could leave Texas and come to California.
Can you remember what sorts of things you had heard about California?
Well, at age 11, I don't remember hearing a lot. I had this picture in my mind of the Golden Gate Bridge and lots of mountains in the ocean nearby. So that was the only idea I had.
Could you tell me a little bit about the journey out here?
Well, that was interesting. By this time, we had this terrible, just a terrible old car. I mean, it was a one-seated Chevrolet coupe, about a 1930 or 1929. Well, I guess it was 1930 model. And it had what in those days called a rumble seat, except they had taken, I don't remember whether my dad took it out or what. But anyway, that was out, and there was like a little pickup bed built in that. And those cars were small. It was my father, myself, my mother, and my youngest sister, who was only 3 years old. We sat in the front, and then the other three children sat in the back, along with everything we owned was on that car. And they had built like a top on the back, you know, so that they were inside. In other words, they weren't riding out in the wind. And it took 6 days. Let's see, we left on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. 6 days. And I think it was something like 1,500 miles. And I think about 200 miles was probably the most. And then we had a lot of car trouble coming along the way. We were better off than some because we could at least afford to spend $1 each night to stay in what they call tourist cabins. It was just a room with some beds and a stove where we could fix our food. And to me, that was very exciting at that time because I was so eager to see the new countryside that I had never seen. And I kept a diary, and I wished I had kept it. I don't know whatever happened to it, because every day I wrote down everywhere we'd been and what we saw and everything that happened to us. And then I wrote my grandfather after we got back and told him the whole story. But I don't know, you know, things get lost, and I wish I had kept that.
Talking about the car trouble that your dad had.
Yeah. Well, it was always he would have to adjust the carburetor depending on the altitude of where we were. I guess the older cars, I don't know enough about carburetors. But anyway, this seemed to be the only car problem that we had. And if you remember, we came into California at Needles on a late Saturday. And then it took us until the next late afternoon before we got past Bakersfield into the San Joaquin Valley. And my first impression was I had never seen land so flat. And you could just see for miles and miles and miles of this very, very flat land. And then Monday morning, we left. I can remember leaving, I think it was like Delano or McFarland, somewhere along in there, where we stayed all night. And then the next day, we got to reached our destination, which was this west of Tulare, on this farm where these people, our friends from Texas, lived.
Mm-hmm. It took you 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you kept a diary of it. Do you remember any things that happened that you said you were writing in your diary?
Well, I was writing, as we would go along, I would describe the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember the Indian cliff dwellers. Actually, the trip was very uneventful as far, I mean, I can just remember riding and riding and riding, you know, except for stopping for my father always adjusting the carburetor or doing something like that. The trip was uneventful. We didn't have any problems,
mm-hmm.
But.
Do you remember if your parents had very much cash with them on the way out here?
No, we left Texas with $60. We didn't have any problem getting here. We didn't run out. I can remember, practically the day we came, they started working, picking cotton for this farmer that owned the farm where we
mm-hmm.
where we lived. So we felt we were lucky because some people just simply came with nothing, you know, and with no money even to, and they tried to work along the way and. But, you know, and really didn't have a destination or a place to go, so we felt we were better off in that respect.
Do you remember coming into California? Do you remember the border?
Just slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very vague. I can remember stopping at the Well, those stations where you have to stop, you know, at the border when you go from one state to another in some states. And, you know, they search your car to see if you're bringing in any, I guess, fruit or vegetables or whatever. And that's about all.
Mm-hmm. What had your friends told you about California? Just that your father would...
I don't remember ever talking to them or hearing them talk to my parents. But it was just that my dad was convinced that they had convinced him that he could at least earn a living, and it would be a lot easier than trying to farm.
Mm-hmm.
Which at that particular point in time it was. At least we got paid. He got paid for the work that he did. Of course, I think the difficult thing was that it was so seasonal.
Mm-hmm. And you say you went to a place just west of Tulare?
West of Tulare. It was on the old Corcoran Highway. And our first school was called Waukena. It's a little community not too far from Corcoran, farm community.
Mm-hmm. And where did you stay when you got there?
Well, that is where we stayed with the friends.
Uh-huh. What was her name?
Duncan. Orville and Lorene Duncan. Her family's name was Bostick. Her parents, I would assume, have been dead for several years.
And so they let you stay with them, and then your parents found work right away.
Yes, they worked for the same people that the Duncans worked for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that included your mother. Your mother went out.
Oh yes, too. She worked. She worked then, and we worked after school and on Saturdays. All the kids.
Do you remember how much money your father made, or how much you made?
No, you know. She speaks in here in this article about making, what was it, $10 a week or something. But $10 bought a lot. Oh yes, she says. The man we picked cotton for, well, now this would really tell me. The man we picked cotton for paid us $1 a hundred. We picked 1,000 pounds that day and got $10. And I tell you, $10 in those days. About a real bill of groceries. Now, that 1,000 pounds for one day, for two people, that sounds like a lot to me. I don't think my parents probably, well, especially my mother. My mother was not a very strong person, and she'd never done field work.
Mm-hmm.
So and I remember this lady as being very strong, and I'm sure my mother didn't pick any amount, large amounts like that.
Mm-hmm. How long did you live with these people?
We arrived about second week in October, and we left right after found Thanksgiving, so it wasn't too long. Probably 6-7 weeks, I think, was all we received.
You said that you had one room.
We had one room. It was, I remember, it's just a large room. Probably wasn't as large as my living room, but I can remember having, we brought one mattress with us, and my folks bought another bed. And I can remember my youngest sister, who was only 3, slept with my parents, and the 4 of us slept. You know, like the mattress would be, say this was a mattress, and we, like this, of course we weren't very old, so I can remember the 4 of us sleeping on that one mattress on the floor, and there was a table with some boxes and a chair or so, and a little stove, and that was all we had.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, and that was, I guess, the first real shock, was living like that, because even though we didn't have really a lot of nice furniture or anything, we at least had a normal type of house with the necessities, beds and chairs and tables and things
in
Texas. Yes. So that was the first real shock, was to realize you were living like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that seemed to bother you. How about your parents?
You know, I wished now that I had talked to them in later years about how they felt about it, because, as I said, as a family, we just never talked about it. It was just like, if you don't talk about it, it isn't really happening to us, you know.
Yeah.
And I must have been difficult for them. Must have been terribly difficult.
especially for my mother, who came from, such a socially higher class type of people than my father did. I know it must have been terribly difficult for her, but I don't remember her ever talking about it. Mm-hmm. But it bothered me, and it was terribly painful to me. But now the rest of my brothers and sisters, I really don't know a lot about how they felt about it either, as I said, because we didn't talk about it. It's kind of interesting. My youngest sister now lives in New Jersey. She's 8 years younger than me, and when she was here last summer, and then she was here in 77. And when she was out here in 1977, now she was only 3 years old when we came to California. Just out of the blue one day, she says to me, "How come we were different than most of those other people that came to California at the same time that we knew?" And before I thought or anything, I says, "Because our family had pride. We knew who we were." And it just came out. I had never thought about it, but you know, it was so strong in me that it just came out. And we talked a little bit about that. And I guess someday we'll have to talk about it.
When you were living there in the house with the Duncans, do you remember if your parents made enough money so that you always felt that you had enough food and...
We had adequate food. I don't remember ever feeling we had a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was just simply...
You don't remember going hungry?
No, I don't remember going hungry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you mentioned other people in your situation. Did you know other people from Oklahoma and Texas?
That lived in,
well,
almost everybody that lived in this area, the only people we knew were other
uh-huh.
people like us. And while I couldn't put it into words then, and it's even difficult now, but I just knew there was a difference between most of those people. Now, well, I can give you an example. This lady is still living just like they lived back then. Whereas my family has come up socially and economically. So there was, you see, we were temporarily down because of the depression and the circumstances, mm-hmm. but yet we were the type of people that would rise above that if the first chance we got, and that's in our whole family. As I said, even our family in Texas on both sides of the family, they came right up the same way, so we would have probably been just as well off had we stayed there. But
mm-hmm. but you don't feel that a lot of the other Okies were that way?
No.
What kinds of people were
here? Well, I think they were just people that... They were good people, and I don't mean to insinuate that, but they were content to stay in the same level.
Mm-hmm.
socioeconomic level. And apparently they never envisioned rising above that. And my dad, we still lived in Avenel, we were coming over, I was bringing one of my children over to the dentist, and my dad came over with me, and he was looking at a cotton field between here and Avenel, and Johnson grass was a real bad thing in the cotton fields, in Texas and California too. And I remember him looking at that, and he says, "I knew I would never be able to do anything for my children, but I could at least get them, bring them someplace where they could do something for themselves." He was looking at that terrible Johnson grass along the side of the road. So it was within my parents that they had to do something so that their children would have a better life, and I have been the same way with mine. I mean, their goal for us was to graduate from high school. Well, my mother did, but my dad only went like the sixth grade, and he was an extremely intelligent man. I mean, it was he you know, could have done a lot of things. He had an education. And then, but also all of us kids graduate from high school, even though I only have my one sister who went on to be a nurse. But then in me was that my children were going to do better. My children have all graduated from college, and they're very successful, and one has gone on his master's degree, extremely successful, very motivated, ambitious type of people. And this is why when my son, when we were talking about this, and he all of a sudden he thought, my, I realize a lot of things why I'm like I am, you know, because he says he doesn't ever remember not thinking that he wouldn't go to college. Mm-hmm. It was just a part of his, from the time he was born. So it, that was kind of, I guess, the way our family was. We were not content to just mm-hmm. stay down. Where
I think a lot of the other people who came out here were content.
Well, yeah, I think that was the difference in the classes of people and the different socioeconomical mm-hmm. levels, different types of people. Mm-hmm. Poverty, you know, sort of became the common denominator. It brought everybody down to their knees together. But as times began to change, then those who were only down temporarily would come right back up to where they were.
Well, these other people that didn't really want to rise above what they were sort of became a stereotype for
right.
Okies
right.
in general.
Yeah.
And it sounds as though you probably resented that.
Right.
People
right.
said, well, you were in that circumstance, so you must be like all
exactly.
the other people.
When I read that article in the paper, the first thing that popped into my mind, maybe that's an opportunity for me to let people know that we weren't all the same. Just like I told you about what my mother-in-law said. I mean, she's, after all these years, she's still lumping everybody into one, mm-hmm. into one category.
What she did say, if you remember?
Oh, she was just sitting there at the table, and she was telling about how these people had that we knew over in Avenel had lived in Taft before. And I says, oh, I didn't know they lived in Taft. I knew they had come from Texas. And then she just got started rambling on about, oh, yes, the people from Texas and Oklahoma and Arkansas, they just came in and they took over Taft, and they just came out day by day in their old rattle trap cars, and they just moved in and took over, and but this time I was, you know, really beginning to just really, I thought I'm just going to listen to her, and the longer she went on, the more condescending she became, and just like, oh, these people were just such low class people, and they just came in and took over our town, you know. And finally, I just says, well, I know exactly all about these kind of people because that's the way my family came to California. Oh, is that so? And she shut up and went on. I'm not sure she ever even realized how she was putting it. I think that's also the basis for my feelings about discrimination, because I know what it feels like to be discriminated against because you are from a certain place at a certain time. And I was also, even when we lived in Texas, I was aware of discriminations because my mother was Irish Catholic and my father had no particular religion, his family. So when we went to the Catholic school, I went for a year and a half, and because our name wasn't particularly real Irish or German sounding, they immediately assumed. Well, I remember the nun, when I started the first grade, and my mother took me to, and she looked at me, and I was sitting in the back of the room, and she looked up and she says, are you one of us? You know, and it made me feel so terrible. And then when we went to the public school, you had to be very careful. I never would lie about my religion. I just didn't tell anybody I was Catholic, because I have to remember one girl looking at me really funny, and she says, Catholics look just like everybody else. So I began those feelings early about discrimination, and that's why I can't imagine being people, at least not feeling discrimination. I think most everybody in some way, somewhere. So how could you do this to somebody else? That's why I feel so badly about the way the people treat the Mexican people now and the black people, and because I remember how it felt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there just doesn't seem to be anything you can say to
to these people to make them realize that you're just as good as they are. So that was one of the reasons that I was kind of anxious to talk about this.
Do you know how they knew that you were from Texas, that you were from
all you had to do
accent,
is, you can say all you had to do is open your mouth.
Your accent.
Oh yes, because every time I uttered a word that first year we were here, somebody would say, "Oh, I can tell where you're from." And you know, now the people in California, their voices sounded very harsh to me. That was I can remember my first day of school in California. The girls' voices sounded so harsh. And so the first year I was here, my sister was just 2 years younger, we really worked at getting rid of our accent. And by the end of a year, nobody could tell by us talking. And even now, though, it's kind of interesting. My oldest son lives in North Carolina, and we go back there to visit, and it wouldn't take long, I don't think, until I would have that accent back. If I get very tired and the voice kind of drags a little bit, I can hear it.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So that was really a problem. You would say something.
Oh
like,
yes.
Well, we know you're an Okie.
Right.
Did this happen just in school, or did you encounter this when you went into town to the store?
I don't remember, because we really didn't go anywhere besides school. And there were so many in Tulare. There were so many other people. Mm-hmm. You know, the same.
But I just wondered what people were.
It was the students at school.
At school.
Yeah. Right.
You mentioned something earlier about the teachers too.
Yes, and I can remember the first school we went to at Waukena, and I can remember my mother taking us up to the school, and this teacher, she went to my classroom and to lead me, and she looked at me and she says, "Why did your parents come to California?" Well, I started to, you know, and I didn't quite know how to answer it. I started to try to tell her as best I could, and she just kind of, I can remember this kind of glazed look on her face and turning her head and just kind of led me on in. And she never would give me any books. I would have to share books with the other students, which meant I didn't have any to take home to try to catch up. She, absolutely as if you didn't exist.
All the other children were given their own books.
They were given their own books. They were given paper. They were called on to recite. But we didn't exist.
She did this to all the kids?
I'm not aware that there was anybody else in the class at that time besides me who was in the same circumstances.
Uh-huh.
And see, I was always used to being a good student and speaking up and reading and doing my homework. And then when we left there and went to Brawley, we went through the same thing again, and the teacher, I remember her starting me in arithmetic, clear back at the beginning of the book, and this was like November. But every child was working at their own speed in arithmetic, so she starts me way back at the beginning. Well, and by the time we left in March, I was not only caught up, but I was almost through with my book. And I remember making friends with one girl, and I was very careful never to let them know where I lived. And finally, not too long before we left there, when I guess I told her where we lived, and I can remember her looking at me, and she was so surprised. "You don't look like one of those people." So,
and that probably gave you very mixed feelings.
Well,
on one hand, you thought, "Well, I'm glad I don't look like one of those." But on the other hand, those people are probably very nice, and it wasn't
now, so you
good
see,
to hear them discriminated.
Yes, and I have good friends now who were in the same, who are about my age that I didn't know then, and we get to talk, and we went through the same thing. So there was not. as I said, as the times got better, there were those of us who did come up and those who just simply stayed on as farm laborers mm-hmm. all their life. And there was nothing wrong with it. It was a good life. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, some of us just weren't content to do that.
But you said you never, as a child, you never really felt that you had totally proven yourself.
Right.
And you had to keep trying over and over again.
Yeah, and it has affected me. It still affects me. I get into a new situation and my first reaction is, oh, these people are so intelligent and I could never be as good as they are. And I have to, every new group I get into, I have to go through this. I can remember after my...
And you never had those feelings?
Never had those before in
Texas. When you
Texas.
First started, excuse me, Texas. When you first started school.
Right. Oh, no.
You were
oh,
very
no.
Confident
very confident. Oh, very confident. And my grandfather, my mother's father, I was his oldest grandchild, and he was always very proud of me, and he was always teaching me things and letting me look at his books and write on his with his paper, and he was always telling me how smart I was, you know, and I believed him. And I think that's probably one of the reasons I did well in school is because I went in with such self-confidence. When I started school, I knew all of my numbers up to 100. I could add and I could subtract. I can remember my fourth birthday looking at my dad and saying, in four more years, I'm going to be 9 years old. And I don't know why, but I can remember that. And I knew all my ABCs. I could read. I had taught myself this. I bugged everybody to the point where they would teach me. So I had a good start in school. And I was very confident, but oh my, mm-hmm. As I started to say, after the children got into school, my children, and I'd been at home all those years, I was married right out of high school, and was really lacking in self-confidence by that time, and I started working in the PTA, and I would do all of these things, and people would congratulate me and tell me what a good job I was doing, but I used to think, why are they saying this? You know, I really found it hard to believe that I could do something. And then I can remember when they wanted me to be the PTA president, and I was so scared. But once I got started doing it, I could do a good job. And I went on till I worked on the state and national level for 8 years. I was a vice president on the board of directors. And yet, even then, when I was still doing all of this, I kept thinking to myself, how am I fooling these people that they think I'm doing a good job?
Yeah. Well, when you back when you were in school in California, and these things would happen one after another, did you still keep trying? Did you?
Oh yes, I kept trying. Oh yes. Oh yes. 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 I don't think anybody, even now, I whatever I do, I just, you know, try my very best. But I just wonder if one ever really gets beyond.
Did you eventually feel like you fit in to your school, your class?
It would always take a while when I'm into a new situation, and it still does. It just takes me a while before I feel that I'm good enough or that I'm capable of working with this with this particular group.
Mm-hmm. How about your brothers and sisters? Do you remember, did they have any problems like this, or did they ever tell you that?
They never.
Did you ever see them being teased by other children?
No. We never, as I said, we've never talked about it. And my sister, let's just 2 years younger than me, has moved to Fresno just last fall for the first time. Since we're adults, we're living kind of close, and we're just beginning to talk about a few things. And I found it kind of interesting. Of course, we're such very different personalities. But she said, not too long ago, that she was aware of all the problems our family went through, but she felt like she was apart from it. It was like it was a play being unfolded way over here, and she was over here watching it. And yet I felt the opposite. I felt I was a part of it, and I had a responsibility to try to make things better or do something about it, and I didn't quite know how, and all these feelings of inadequacy and not knowing quite what to do. So I thought, well, that's certainly...
Was there anyone that supported you? You say the teachers, were all the teachers...
No, just some of them. And that was at the very beginning. Now, when we moved back to Tulare after we went to Brawley, and we moved in, we stayed there from May 1940 through summer of 42, which was, for us then, was a long time to stay in one place. And as soon as we got acquainted in this little school district, and the teachers began to know us then, and my sisters and my brother, we all were good students, could see what we could do, then it was different. I mean, they didn't treat us that way. I think it was the students who moved on continuously were the ones that they just simply, and I still suspect that the migrant children are still treated that way to a great extent.
How about the other migrant kids that you knew? You say you don't really remember any in your classroom.
Because I only went to Waukena for about 6 weeks, and if there were others in my classroom, I either don't remember or wasn't aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, at Brawley, I don't know in my particular classroom if there were any, but there were certainly a lot of students in that school, but it was a huge city school. So, you know, they were probably spread out through the school. And then when we moved back to Tulare and went to this little country school, there were some of the students whose parents owned the farms, and then there were some students there whose fathers worked on farms like mine. There were just the two kinds, and it was a small school. There was only like five in my eighth grade class when I graduated from the eighth grade. So in eight grades, I'd say there in the school, there probably wasn't more than 50 or 60 students and two teachers. So that was a good time.
Did you feel that class division? You say some of the kids' fathers were...
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That was very...
Was that very distinct for
you?
It
was very distinct for me. Yeah.
Were you friends with the children of the
farm owner? Oh, yes. We were all friends. Mm-hmm. I don't think they felt the difference. I think I was the one that felt the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved to Avenel in 1942, my father finally got a job with... Well, he started out with what's called the Kettleman North Dome Association. It was an independent oil company, and then Standard Oil bought them out. But there really wasn't any class distinction, I will say that, in Avenel, because everybody's father worked for Standard Oil for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were a little higher up than others, but there didn't seem to be any difference once we got away from the farm. Yeah. Is it blinking?
Yeah. We were talking about the first home you lived in, and your father working on the farm where the Duncans were.
Mm-hmm.
How long were you there?
About 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sounds like you moved around quite a bit following...
We from there we went to Brawley. That was like Thanksgiving, which would have been end of November. We stayed there until March. And then we came back to Tulare, and we didn't move anymore.
So you just have like three moves then?
Yes, in that 1 year, right. And then in 1942, then my father got a job over in Avenel, and we moved there, and my mother still lives there. We never moved anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you remember the living situations you had in Brawley, and then... Back when you moved to Tulare?
Oh, yes. See, it was in Brawley is where we lived in what they called a government camp.
Mm-hmm. And that's... Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, this is... And I don't know why, as I said, maybe it was because it was a tent and not a house. But that, for me, was the most, our family was the most degrading experience of the whole thing. My husband doesn't know we lived there. My children don't know. This is the first time I have ever said this out loud. It was...
As I understand it, the government camps were very clean.
They were. They were. It wasn't the physical environment so much as what we had just simply been reduced to that. And we had to live on handouts of that surplus food. I mean, that was all we had to eat. And because my father practically earned nothing while we were down there, you know, in the fields. And they would come around those big trucks with the canned milk and the raisins and the canned tomato. Well, we would starve to death if we hadn't had it, but, you know, to live like that, it was a big platform. And they gave you a tent, and the platform was wood up about so high, and it was painted, and real a nice big tents. And then outside the tent area was a cooking area with covered and with cupboards. I mean, it was on cement and water there. It was nice. And then for ever so many tents, there was a wash house. There were washing machines and stationary tubs to wash your clothes. There were hot showers and places and toilets to go to the toilet. They were clean, and there was a recreation center. So the physical part
of it was really pretty nice.
Yes. In fact, it was more comfortable and cleaner than that old house that we lived in. But I think one thing is we were all lumped together. And as far as the town and the community, as a little girl at school says, oh, I would have never thought you were one of those. I mean, it was a real stigma to have lived there.
About one of those that lived in the government.
Yes. And of course, they were all newly arrived people from Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas. Uh-huh.
Do you remember many of the other people that lived there? Were they like you, or did you feel that some of them were some of the sorts that didn't want to buy them?
Both kinds. Yeah, there were some really nice people there. Uh-huh. And some of them had trailer houses that they brought with them and parked alongside the tent, little trailer houses too. So there were all kinds of people there. Mm-hmm. It was the problem for us was that the fact that we were just there was like for everybody to look at, you know.
It was a very public.
Right. Place. Yes. And then to have to depend on those handouts for food, you know, it was so degrading. And never we have ever talked about that. Once we got back, even though when we came back, we had a house on a farm. It wasn't all that nice, but at least it was a house, you know.
How long were you there,
Umbrella? From about Thanksgiving
to November to March,
right.
March. So it was kind of a lengthy period.
Yeah.
To be living there. Did you have problems at that school with the teachers?
That was the teacher that said started me way back in
right,
the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
And then the little girl said she didn't.
Yeah, and I was very careful. I had learned from my experience, you see, in Texas, of going between the Catholic school and the public school about you don't tell everything. So I didn't tell any of the students or anybody in my class where I was from or where I lived. I made sure they didn't know, but I guess I don't remember now why I told her toward the end, But I did, because I knew how that I probably wouldn't have any friends or anybody to talk to. I just had that feeling if they knew where I was from. As I said, once we left there, I don't ever remember a conversation ever in our family, the fact that we lived there. We just never, as I said, this is the first time I've ever said this out loud to another human being. We just didn't talk about it.
Did your parents ever say anything to you about while you were there? Like, things will get better?
No. I mean, my father, of course, when the cotton season was over, I mean, I remember and realized and understand his reason for going was that there were crops down there where he could earn a living. But we really didn't. There wasn't. I don't remember whether there just wasn't that much work or whether there was too many people for the amount of work. Or what? But he worked very little while we were there.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what your parents did with their time then?
No, of course we were in school all day. Mm-hmm. So I just don't remember. It seemed like my dad was always off with some other men, or I don't know what they were doing. Or
mm-hmm. Some of the people who live in the government camps describe some of the social activities they had. They said they had games for the children and dances for the adults.
They did, right, like right. That. And I can remember talent shows where everybody, you know, would get up and sing or do something. And mm-hmm. Now, life within that area, as I said, the physical environment and the people that we associated with in the camp wasn't all that bad. It was when you had to go out and and deal with the rest of the community
mm-hmm.
and the way they made you feel.
You felt there was a stigma.
Oh, yes, there definitely was. And not only that, we just didn't want the people back up in Tulare and where we've lived. We just didn't want anybody to know we'd ever lived like that.
Mm-hmm. And then, I guess it really bothered you then that you had to take food.
Oh, that, oh, yes.
You felt like that was welfare.
It was welfare. I mean, there was no question about that. And then even after we came back to Tulare, even though my father had a permanent job on a farm, during the real winter months, like from about December to when they started planting the spring crops, so there would be a period of about 3 months there where we would have to get food stamps. And that was a terrible, I mean, this happened, as I look back now, it was only like about 2 winters, but it seemed like forever, and it was such a degrading, you know, such, it was so difficult for us.
Did you feel that other people found it very difficult, and other people in your situation felt degraded?
I don't know. We never talked to them about it. Or at least I didn't, whether my parents did. But, I mean, we would have, certainly we had food to eat as, you know, because as a result of having it. But it was just what it does to you inside that makes it hard.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember seeing any ditch camps where people would put tents or paper shacks by ditches or sand
mm-hmm.
ditches?
Oh, yes, lots of that. I was talking to a friend who was over here just about a week ago. Her family came from Kansas in 1935, and she was talking about living like that in the tents. Yeah.
But you remember seeing them?
Oh, yes, everywhere. We even had those in Texas the last few years we were there.
Oh, really?
People were living like that, uh-huh. Especially near creeks because there would be water.
Uh-huh. Did you know any people that...
I was not acquainted with them.
That must have made you feel fortunate.
Right. We were better off than they were.
You didn't want to live in a government camp.
Yeah.
More than
oh, yes, did. Right. Now, if you're going to have to live in a tent, you were better off living in the government camp than you were just alongside the road or and along the edge of the fields and some of those places, because they had no sanitary
mm-hmm.
conditions.
Did you hear that there was a lot of disease?
I don't remember hearing that. I'm sure there must have been.
Mm-hmm.
And these people didn't have access either to the medical help that we had, which was important too, because we had doctors at the government camp.
Did you have opportunity to use the doctors?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you had a cold or whatever, you know, you were sick, all you had to do was just go down and they would take care of you.
Mm-hmm. How about the other times in California when you were in the government camp? Did you have a regular doctor or was it for emergency?
It was just emergency. I'm sure it was emergency type medicine.
Mm-hmm.
We were quite healthy. I don't recall that, you know, we didn't have any serious illnesses or anything, but I'm sure it was just a clinic where probably the doctors were donating their time or something. I don't know. Or maybe they were paid by the government. I don't know.
Do you remember what you did in your spare time then, in your leisure time?
You mean when we lived in the government camp?
camp or other places in California, did you worked in the fields?
Well, that was usually in the fall when there was cotton to pick. I never had a problem finding anything to do because I was always reading or sewing, or maybe I'd find some friends, girlfriends to talk to or go for walks. And then, of course, when we came back to Tulare, we lived in the country, and it was kind of a long, you know, houses were not that close together, so.
When you came back to Tulare and went back in school, did you have any problems then?
No, not too much. That's what I said, it was the small country school where there was only 50 or 60.
Kids.
Yeah, and things got better after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you still have those memories of
things that
happened to you before that. Were you a little bit, maybe not looking for people to pick on you or insult you, but do you think maybe you're a little bit sensitive?
Oh, I'm sure I was. Oh, I was. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. Yes, I'm sure I was probably overly sensitive because I think it probably bothered me more than it did some others in the same circumstances, and probably even more than my brothers and sisters. Of course, they were younger. Now, maybe if I had been younger, maybe I wouldn't have been as much as aware. I don't know.
We were talking about the term Okie, and you said that you were from Texas, and it always bothered you when people would assume mm-hmm. that you were from Oklahoma.
Well, when we lived in Texas, first place, Texas people are very proud. Well, I'm sure Oklahoma people are too, but we didn't know that, you see. We were very proud that we were from Texas. And when you're in the fifth grade, you study Texas history before you study U.S. history. And the people that lived just to the north of us across the border into Oklahoma we were poor, but they were even more poor. I mean, I think these are probably, we're getting into the people that really came from the Dust Bowl types. So we felt that we were just maybe a little bit better off than they were. And we did not want... In other words, we were proud we were from Texas. We were proud to be Texans. And when we came to California, there was not a slang word for Texans. You were a Texan. But if you were from Oklahoma, you were an Okie. If you were from Arkansas, you were an Arkie. And that was not a good term. And so if anybody ever got you confused, you let them know right away that you were from Texas. And it made you... I don't know, there was just a feeling that maybe you were just a little bit better. Maybe you were just a notch above or something.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're really down, I mean, it's important that any little thing that makes you feel that you're pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So you corrected people.
Oh, did we? Yes, we corrected people.
I can tell from your accent you're an Okie.
There is a difference in accents. There was a time, maybe not so much anymore, I could tell you if somebody was from Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi. I really was aware of accents at that time. Even now I can tell somewhat. There's a difference, there's a very distinct difference between Oklahoma and Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Texas is such a large state, you have people with different accents within the state.
Right.
Now, our relatives from South Texas talked different than we did.
Do you remember if there are other ways that they could single you out besides your accent, perhaps the way you dressed or the way you wore your hair or anything like that?
I really don't know. I wasn't aware of it. Of course, if you're in a small school, I mean, they know, you know, as soon as you know, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
No. But I'm not aware
How
that...
How long was it before you really considered yourself a Californian? Belonged here.
Oh, for most of you, 1939, probably by eighth grade, 1942.
because in this small school where I graduated in the eighth grade, I liked the people, and I began to feel that that was home. In fact, I was very upset when my family moved to Avenel because, you know, it's very nice and green, Tulare, very, very beautiful area, and I had become acquainted with the people, and I was just going to go start to high school there. And then we had to move to Avenel, and it was starting all over again. I didn't know anybody, and the area was very ugly, and very dry and brown and barren, and so it took just about one more year then before, when I first started over there, I just didn't care whether I had any friends or whether I knew anybody. But I did well in school, though, right from the beginning, and I concentrated on my schoolwork, and by the end of a year, I had some friends, and it was all right then.
Was there much of the discrimination still going on then when you were in high school? That would have been during the war by then.
Yes, right. Well, as I said, they're not in Avenel, because by that time they were not that aware of my background, and everybody else, you know, as I said earlier, everybody's father worked for Standard Oil, or at least some oil company. Just about all everybody was on the same level.
Mm-hmm. Back to your father's job when he went down to Brawland and then came back up here. How did he know where to find work?
Well,
was he just sort of the grapevine? People would just hear about jobs?
Well, of course, the fruit and the vegetables, I think they just went... In other words, at that time of the year, they were picking the beans and the lettuce. They knew where to go, right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just went out and hired on by the day. Now, when we came back to Tulare, he came back to the same place where we were when we went down to Brawley, the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And these people then knew of another farmer who needed a permanent ranch hand. It was just a few miles, I think, to the north, and they sent us over there, and which was very lucky because we just came right up and just moved into this house, you know, and we lived there over about 2.5 years,
mm-hmm.
and that was probably the best thing that happened to us at that time.
Mm-hmm. And that was a permanent job.
Mm-hmm.
But were there some?
Well, it was yes. I mean, it was permanent as long as he worked. But, when, you know, there were times in the year when there wasn't any work to do.
Right. And that's when you had to take
Yes, that's when we had the food stamps. But they were furnished as a house,
mm-hmm.
with the utilities, and it was the old home on the ranch. They had, in the meantime, had built a new one for the people that owned it. So the house wasn't all that bad. It was two-story, very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So things began to looking up then.
Even though you said your family really never talked about things, do you have any insight as to how your father felt about this? I mean, he was the breadwinner.
Yeah.
He was the one who had to support these children and his wife.
As my son was saying to me the other day, that must have tore his insides out. I guess what was difficult, because I have a younger brother who's only 36. He's 16 years, well, he'll soon be 37. 16 years younger than me, and my younger brother is so much like him that I'm just now beginning to kind of look at my younger brother and maybe understand my father a little bit. He was an extremely quiet person, but very gentle, sensitive, and I suspect I'm a lot like him, and he never talked, period. My younger brother's the same way. Never talks about anything, and he was over here to visit a couple of weeks ago, and my sister came over, and we sat here in the living room. I had just gotten some new records of country music, and my sister wanted to hear them, and we were listening to those, and here was my brother. All of a sudden, he started talking about country music. We didn't even know he liked country music. There isn't a country music person that ever lived that he doesn't know everything about, and if they're dead, he knows what they died of, and we sat here all afternoon listening to him. So if I had known years ago a little more like what I know now, and I could have talked to my father and drawn him out,
mm-hmm.
I could have learned a lot.
Yeah.
But
I just didn't know enough to really do that, and he just never talked. I know that when we were in Texas, he played, they called it a violin, they called it a fiddle. Uh-huh. He played bluegrass and music, and I can remember people coming to the house and getting him to play for dances. And he didn't bring his violin with him, so he never played his, because he had no way, you know, to bring it, no way to bring it with him, so he never played his music anymore. And I know that he liked to listen to music. And as my sister says, she can remember him sitting by the radio and listening, and he would, like, you know, just really keeping beat with that music.
Yeah. Did the family ever sing?
No, we didn't seem to have any talent at all as far as singing. And so, as I said, that's one of my real regrets. I wish I had known enough. Of course, I said my father was 34 years old. He was 35 when I was born. And he died in 1973 at 80, and he was very ill a couple of years before he died. And then I was married very young and moved, you know, away from the family home and wasn't around him all that much. But as I look back now, there's so much I'd like to know now that I could have talked to him about it. Mm-hmm. And he just wasn't the kind to open up his mouth and volunteer anything.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds as though he took the responsibility as head of the family.
Oh, he did. Oh, yes, yes, right, right.
And it pained him.
Oh, I'm sure it did. Oh, yes, yes.
When he had to take.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what he did with his time in the slack seasons when you had to take? A little help. Was he constantly looking for work, or?
Well, that would only be like maybe 3 months, or maybe not that much. Mm-hmm. And it was raining, and the weather
right.
was bad. And I remember him being around the house, or there was a barn there, and being outside, or he'd go off to town, or talk with other men in the neighborhood that he knew who was. There was. Couple of other families who did the same type of work that we were friendly with at that time, and he'd be mm-hmm. visiting them. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember if he ever said whether the ranchers and growers treated him well or whether they didn't mm-hmm. treat him well?
No, he never talked about anything like that. These are the kinds of things I would like to talk to him now about.
Do you have any hint, just from what you've heard or what you had seen as a child, whether the bosses were...
I think they liked him. Oh, yeah.
Treated people well?
Of course, the one we had, the only one we had for those 2.5 years, he treated us. I mean, they were nice people. And my dad was a good worker and a hard worker, and this man really come to depend on him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did he ever tell you much about the kind of work he did? You just say working in the fields. So did you just about?
Yes. He plowed. He planted the cotton, and of course irrigating was a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then there would be like alfalfa hay to mow and that. You know, and then they would have to gather that in, and just whatever work had to be done. He ran the tractors.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever had to be
when
done,
you
he
worked,
did it.
What did you do?
Picked cotton was all. It was, you know, on Saturdays and Sundays.
Oh boy.
That's terrible stuff. I remember working in the fruit one summer. My mother and the kids cut apricots. They would bring them in from the field, and it was like under a big open shed, and we would cut the apricots in half, and I guess they were going to dry them. I don't know. I remember.
Yeah.
Put them out on something flat. I remember doing that one summer for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of people have told me about the diet that a lot of the newcomers from Oklahoma and Texas had, that it was a little bit different from the diet that Californians have. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes, probably.
That you lived on?
Yes.
You mentioned a little bit about the pork.
Yeah, well, I can tell you for breakfast. I can tell you exactly. My father always, when we were in Texas, and eventually his diet changed too, is there would be, for breakfast he would have, because my father didn't drink milk, he would have like bacon, and my mother would make biscuits and gravy and coffee. And then at noontime there would be always beans, and probably with some cornbread and probably some fried potatoes or boiled potatoes, mm-hmm. mostly I think fried potatoes. Yeah. And then our evening meal would usually be eggs. That's when we had our eggs. Eggs and potatoes and gravy and more biscuits and milk. Now, in the summer, there would be fresh vegetables, but that would be at the noon meal, and fruits, and sometimes it would be canned fruits, and then they would butcher the hogs and then cure the meat, because that's the only way they had of keeping it, so we would have pork. And then after we came to California, eventually we started eating more like eggs and bacon for breakfast, and maybe sandwiches and so forth at noon. We went from breakfast, lunch, and dinner rather than breakfast, dinner, and supper. Uh-huh. And then the big meal in the evening with, of course, I can remember buying, when we first came to California, and the first summer we lived at Tulare, there would be like the Japanese before World War II, so many of them had like, they called them little truck gardens, so it would be like, they'd have a few acres, you know, and then they would sell the produce at the side of the road, and my mother and I would go to town during the middle of the week and buy groceries, and then I can remember buying 10 pounds of tomatoes for 25 cents, and just all kinds of vegetables, so our diet did change.
Uh-huh. You think yeah. for the
better? Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Some of the children seemed to have health problems when they came out here because of their diet had been deficient.
Oh, yes. I have a denture today because of because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The teeth just didn't hold up. That was probably one of the biggest things. Yeah.
Did you hear very much about other kids having health problems?
It was common. I think mostly the teeth was a big thing, because you know, not having enough milk and vitamins and things in your earlier years.
When we were just talking about the food stamp. Do you think that lots of other people were in the same position? Were they?
Oh, everybody who was involved in any kind of farm work had the food stamps in the winter time. Now, of course, we didn't have.
That didn't make you feel any.
Didn't make you feel any better. No, as I say, I am not personally aware of who had them and who didn't. Mm-hmm. It's something you didn't talk about.
But you know a lot of people.
Well, I knew they probably had to, and I can remember. My grandfather came from Texas to visit us one winter, and my mother was so embarrassed for him to have to know that that's the way we bought our groceries.
Mm-hmm. But do you remember his reaction?
No, I don't. I don't know that he even knew it.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe she was afraid he'd find out. I don't know. She just didn't want it. That was just something she didn't want him to know.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember your father ever coming home and talking about attempts to unionize the farm workers?
No, I'm not. I don't think that was ever even heard of back then. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about strikes? Do you recall any strikes in there?
No. I wasn't even aware there was such a word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, he probably would have been so happy to get the work, he wouldn't dream of going on strike.
Oh, right.
We were talking about the schools and some of the problems you had to begin with. Can you remember other places you went, other public places where you might have had other problems, or where your parents might have run into problems?
Like what?
Well, if you go into town.
Oh. Well,
movies. I guess when you're in high school, you might have started.
Yeah. No, I don't remember any problems like that.
anything like that.
Yeah, well, because we would usually go to town like once a week to buy the groceries and,
mm-hmm.
and shop, and that was really about the only place we ever went. But I'm not aware of any problems. Of course, as I look back now at Tulare, being a little farm town, I'm sure half the people there were probably just like us.
Right. Uh-huh. How about
and,
church?
That was kind of a strange experience because, as I said, in Texas we didn't go to church regularly. We always lived so far away,
uh-huh.
and then we went to church regularly to Tulare, but it was I don't remember anybody ever speaking to us, and the people for the most part that were Catholics in Tulare were Portuguese people, and while they're a good looking. I remember sitting looking at those beautiful Portuguese girls, you know, they're so pretty. And but they were farmers and dairy farmers and business people, and I don't recall ever, while we ever lived there, anybody ever even speaking to us.
How long did you go to church
then? Well, about 2 years, I guess, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was probably something your family didn't talk about again.
Oh, no, they didn't talk about that. No. Somehow, I guess we just didn't expect them to speak to us. I don't recall ever expecting them to.
You didn't feel inclined to approach them and
no.
start speaking to them
no.
either?
No, no. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Catholic Church. They're friendlier now, but they didn't tend to do any socializing together.
Mm-hmm. Were there other people in your circumstance that attended church? Or
I'm not aware of any. There were very few Catholic people. I'm not even aware of being acquainted with any other people who were Catholics, who were,
mm-hmm.
You know, like we were, farm workers.
I wanted to ask you, have you ever seen the movie The Grapes of Wrath?
Yes.
Read the book?
Yes, I've seen the movie twice. Someday I want to read the book, but I just haven't really gotten around to looking for it, or I guess I could go to the library and get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw The Grapes of Wrath the first time when we'd been in California less than a year. It was in 1940. We came out in the fall of 1939, and this was in 1940 when we were still down at Brawley. And believe you me, that was a painful experience. And I saw the movie again, well, my husband and I saw it together, must have been up in the 50s over in Avenel. You know, it was still going around. And so I was able to appreciate it maybe a little more.
Yeah.
But
do you remember very much about the first time around that you saw it? Do you remember things in it that really bothered you?
Yes, those people, the way they came to California in that terrible old truck, and all of those people, there were several families, I guess, all of the same family, but together,
mm-hmm.
and they were on that truck, and the way they stopped along the side of the road, and the way that the part that Henry Fonda played, because he was a young man then, the police were always after them, and you know they were treated so terrible, and I just identified with all of that. And there have been many times I've said the only difference between us and the Jode family was at least we had a place to come to.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
did it bother you the language they used, or?
I don't remember the language bothering me. I'm not aware of it.
Or some of their morals.
It's probably been 20 years or so since I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was not ever.
They buried someone alongside the road.
Yeah, well, right, but you know, they didn't have any choice. I mean, that was my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't remember anything like that bothering me. I mean, I just sort of sympathized for the
mm-hmm.
for the people.
Did you
and
feel
I,
that there were very many Okies like that?
I think there were a lot. Yes, at least that was my feeling. There were a lot of people like that. As I said, it made me feel a little more fortunate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you still, you didn't consider yourself like them.
No. I never considered
at least I didn't, I can't speak for the rest of my family, I never considered myself any different than when we were in Texas and considered somebody. Mm-hmm. In my inside, I always knew I was somebody. And it just could never figure out why these people looked at us like, you know, thought of us the way they did.
So in Texas, you were pretty poor then.
We were poor in terms of...
monetary.
Right.
But you say you still were an important part of the community. People
yeah,
knew who
right,
you were, and
yeah,
they treated you with
right,
respect.
Right. And that, you see, at least then... class distinction, I don't know about all over, but in the South, and I think it's still that pretty much that way now, there is a lot of class distinction. And as I say, particularly in my mother's family, I mean, they were prominent people in the community. They had a nice farm, a nice home, and nice clothes, and nice everything. And my grandfather was very active in Democratic politics and in the Catholic Church, and I mean, people, everybody knew who they were, and they were well respected. And in my father's family, the aunt that he did come to live with were their friends, and they were also prominent people in the community. And of course, my father's background with his family were quite well off about the Civil War, and after the Civil War, and they came to Texas and bought land. So he had instilled in him that same kind of pride that made you just feel like you were up here. There may be a lot of other people down here, but you were up here. Well, you see, when we came to California, we still felt that way inside.
Mm-hmm.
But we were reduced to the same level as all the other people, and I think there was the painful part about it.
Mm-hmm. And that really happened immediately.
And yes, right. And see, we were not aware, or at least I wasn't, I should say, I was not aware at 11 years old. To me, it was a big adventure. And then to just all of us, it just, from the day you arrived, you know, it was just like you were thrown into another world and there was no way to get out and no way to go back.
Mm-hmm. You probably did want to go back.
Oh, I wanted to go back. Oh, I wanted to go back so bad. Now, a lot of people did go back. They couldn't stand it. They went back. But my family never considered it.
You knew people that went back to Texas?
Oh, yes. I mean, in Oklahoma, I mean, a lot of people, they couldn't take it. Uh-huh. They didn't stay. They got back the best way they could. But my family never considered it. My dad was just so sure he was better off, and he did what he thought was best. But my parents never considered going back.
Uh-huh. It sounds like you were pretty disappointed.
Terribly disappointed. I was terribly, we were terribly disillusioned. At least I was.
Were there any good things that you felt came out of it at the time?
At the time, I couldn't think of anything
good.
There was nothing good.
Yeah.
It just seemed like life was so hard. And
you didn't expect to find anything like that.
I don't think that I ever thought about what I expected to find, I guess,
mm-hmm.
at that age. I can remember, we'd been here like about 2 years, and I had a cousin who was about 2 or 3 years older than me, and she married when she was like about 15. And I can remember her writing to us, and she and her husband wanting to come out. And I remember my parents were so horrified that we just wrote back to her and told her, don't you dare leave. People are living in ditch banks, in tents, and how we really explained to her how people were living out here and what she would be in for the same thing, she and her young husband. And they didn't come either.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. When World War II came, you said you moved and your husband had a job working for Stanley.
Well, my father. I wasn't married.
Oh, your father.
My father, yes.
Your father started working for...
Well, that's when the jobs began to open up. And he quit working on the farm and went over to Avenel and got a job over there.
Mm-hmm.
Because by this time, with
Well,
was that a permanent job?
Oh yes, he retired. He retired from there when he was 65. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how about economically? Did he make?
Oh yes. For the first time in his life, he was making a decent living. And then they worked a lot of overtime, you know, during the war. He was, you know, they'd work like 10 days straight with one day off or something, you know, and they were getting a lot of overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And they owned their own home and were able to buy their own home and have nice cars and, you know, live like everybody else lived.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So really, in terms of your particular family circumstances, the war did a lot.
Well, financially, yes. Mm-hmm. And then, we didn't have anybody in the war.
Your father was too old.
He was too old, and then even I would not have been in during the war if I'd been a male child, because I was 17 when the war ended, and my brother was only 13, I guess. He was in the Korean War, but at that particular point, we had no close family. We had some cousins in Texas that were in the war, but nobody in our immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Has your life changed a lot since then? It sounds like up until, say, World War II, you lived one life, and then
right.
It's been a totally different life
yeah.
since then.
Well, since I was married right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
just after the war.
Yes. The war ended in summer 1945, and my husband, who'd also gone to high school there, I didn't know him in high school, and he came home in December 1945 on leave
uh-huh.
from overseas. He was in the Seabees, and that's when I met him, and then he got out of the service in March 1946, and then we were married in June 1946, 2 weeks after I graduated from high school. So my life is just, you know, I just think of my life is like in two parts, up until I met him and then since then, because we bought a brand new home in Avenel. His family were always used to, his father worked for Standard Oil all those years, and they were always used to, you know, better standard of living than my family had, and we bought a brand new home, and we lived there 11 years, so we moved into this house, which was a brand new home, and he's always made a good living. I mean, we've never had a lot of money, but we've had a good living, and we have a nice home and a nice place over, trailer house over the coast, and we have a good life now, and it has continually gotten better, and we had four children, and I said from the time.
You're telling me about your kids, that two of them went to
Occidental. The oldest one went to Cal Poly. He's a mechanical engineer. He was recruited at Cal Poly by an Eastern firm. It's part of ITT.
Mm-hmm.
And
North Carolina.
It's in North Carolina. And then our youngest is our daughter. And she went to Cal Poly 3 years, and then she married a young man who was graduating. And they moved to Modesto, and she worked for 3 years, and now they've moved to San Diego so she can go back to school full-time. And she's got about, I think this semester, a class in the summer, and next one more semester to graduate. And then she's wants to be a chiropractor, so she'll have 4 years of medical school. After that, she's determined to continue until she reaches her goal.
One of your sons that went to Occidental got his master's
at UC Santa Barbara. He was one of 10 selected in to go in directly into a PhD program at UC Santa Barbara. I had four really bright kids. I mean, they're really bright. And when he got his master's degree, they recommended that he work a while because he was so young. And then he never went back. He didn't. I wished he had gone ahead and finished it, but his PhD, but he didn't.
How about your other son that went to Occidental?
Oh, he owns a film company here in town. He and his wife and another couple. And they started on a shoestring 5 years ago. We didn't expect it ever, and they survived, and they are now really doing well. They do documentaries and commercials. And now they're doing commercials offered on a nationwide basis. My daughter-in-law is back in Wisconsin this week doing some seminars on showing the people how to use these commercials that they've made for them.
Yeah.
And they have a project they're going to take to China. And they've been to Europe to do filming. And he has the offices, the whole top floor of a bank building downtown. We just can't believe it.
Oh, you must be really proud of
them. Oh, I'm really proud of them, yeah.
Well, yeah. Then all the things that their grandparents went through.
It was just like one generation working totally to push the next generation ahead. And as I was telling my son, you know, he says he just didn't ever remember when he wasn't planning to go to college, and my other son had said that it just never occurred to him he wasn't. I says, because the day you were born and when I was bathing you, I whispered into your ear, you will go to college, you will go to college. and it seems like everything that my husband and I have worked for, we moved to Fresno to get them out of Avenel. We moved to this part of town so that they would be associating with the type of people that go to college. They graduate from Bullard High School, which is the place. I mean, the north, I don't know if you're familiar with Fresno, but the northwest section of the town is where all the people who go to college live, you see. And every move we made was just to push those kids one step higher. And we weren't ostentatious about it. We didn't say, this is why we're doing it. We just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it never occurred to them that there was any other way to go.
So
yeah.
That sense of upward mobility
right.
really carried on.
And it's interesting, you know, as I said, I was married right out of high school, but I took a course in sociology at City College last year, and I was so amazed because here I was learning all of the things that I've been doing and why I was doing it. And it also was something interesting that, I guess I've known it too. One generation, you can only push, you can only go so far forward. In other words, my husband and I, or my parents, only had so much ability to push us so far. Their goal for us was to graduate from high school because that was more than what they had. And then the goal my husband and I had for our children was to go to college because that would open doors that we never had.
Mm-hmm.
My husband is very successful in his work and he makes a tremendous salary, but at the same time, if he ever broke a leg, I mean, he's a construction superintendent, and if he ever broke a leg or something, you know, and in other words, his body gave way on him, he probably would, there isn't the security in the type of work he does that there would be somebody who was trained professionally at college to do something, like our son who's the mechanical engineer. He's he's only 33 years old, and he's head of the engineering division for that big company. He has like 80 or 90 engineers under him. He took this fellow's place that was about 55 or 60 years old. He took his place about a year ago. So he's still going up the ladder too, you know. I mean, it's just like we got them started, and they're continuing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that should make up for.
We're trying to
right,
right.
You showed them.
Yeah. Maybe I couldn't do it, but at least I put my children in the position to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you wanted to go back to Texas as a child, but now after all this has happened, after you feel like you've had a good life and your children have been so successful, are you glad that you came to California now?
I can't honestly say so because it's very hard to say that because my husband and my children, I would have probably had a different husband and different children, and that's hard to say because I love the ones I have so much, and I love it here, and I would have no desire to change, but I guess what I'm trying to say was I think I would have been just as well off had we stayed or had we gone back right after we came. Because if I look at the other members of my family, my father's family and my mother's family, and they've done the same thing. I mean, they came back after the Depression, and their children have gone to college and are successful. We haven't done anything that they didn't do back there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you you have any desire to go back now?
It's one of the strongest desires I have in the world. Yeah.
Maybe even see if you can find the house.
Exactly. That's the first thing I'm going to do. I'm sure it isn't there. It's an old shack a long time ago. But anyway, my husband has promised me when he retires. Of course, he's only 56. He's got a few years left. But
you've got most of your family back there.
All of my family's
so you've
back
got
there.
Ties.
Oh, yeah, all of my family's back there. All of the relatives I have, mm-hmm. except for my own brothers and sisters who are here. Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to go back to something for a minute. I've heard that a lot of men who are heads of families and had a great deal of responsibility, mm-hmm. when they couldn't find jobs and times were rough, they turned to the bottle and drank a lot. You said your father...
Yes, he did. Of course, my father was one who liked his booze. He, as I said, he never became an alcoholic. That wasn't his fault though, because he loved his booze. He would tell you he just liked a good drink. But I can remember though, during those first few years that we were here, this was when a lot of the men would get together, and when they didn't have any work, and they would drink wine, and I'm sure they drank it because it was probably cheap, or you know, and that's all they could afford to drink. And I can remember him coming home when he could hardly get in the door, and it was a problem. It didn't, it didn't tear up the family or anything, and
mm-hmm. Did he seem to get over that when he had more permanent employment?
Oh yes. He would still drink once in a while with his friends, and maybe get a little too much now and then. But it was not.
Not a regular thing.
No, it was never, even back then, it was never a regular thing. I think just maybe from lack of something else to do, the men would get together.
Did you ever know of any or hear of any men who became kind of winos or alcoholics?
I'm not personally aware of any. You know, you didn't have to be poor to become an alcoholic. My father's husband's father died an alcoholic, and the man was never had a financial problem in his life. He liked his booze and liked too much of it.
Yeah. Sometimes that helped things along, though, when things were
Oh, yes,
rough.
I'm sure it would be. Yeah.
It made things a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit more desirable then. When you were a child and you were having the problems in school, did they ever use the word okie a lot when they teased you?
I don't remember anyone ever calling me an okie, because I never let anybody get the fact that I was a Texan. I was so proud of that, you see. So that, as far as I know, they always knew I was from Texas. But I do know that the term was used an awful lot. Mm-hmm. And I was aware.
Did you think of the connotations that it had? It's ignorant.
Right. Almost the same way a lot of people think of the Mexican children now.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the term okie's changed since then? That if someone says okie now, it means something?
I don't ever hear it used anymore. But I'm sure, especially if an older person used it, they would mean it in the same terms. Just like my mother-in-law couple of weeks ago when we were having that conversation. I mean, I know in her mind she was using the term okie the same way she would have used it 30, 40 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yes, because she said those okies came out.
Yes, right, and took over our town.
She was in Taft.
She was in Taft, right. That's where my husband was born.
And she still used it in a very, very negative
way. Right,
do you think people still feel that way?
I think the people who experienced, who lived at that time, I think they do. No. Because I don't think that older people change that much. I know my mother still has the same prejudices and biases that she had back in her younger years. I can't see where she's, or my husband's mother have ever changed as far as their ideas.
Uh-huh.